And you're listening to KRFP Moscow. This is a home to Moscow's community radio station, volunteer radio station, and you're listening to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. This is Gary here, and I have a special guest with me in the studio today, Sue Westervelt. We're going to be talking a little bit about some wolves, but I wanted to make a couple of quick announcements first. I started off with a couple of hot topics that are happening in and around the Wild Clearwater Country. These are both on national issues, though. First of all, if you're interested in finding out about where your public lands are in terms of being marketed and sold, fee demonstration project, there's some individuals across the nation that are urging people to contact Congress. For more information, you can contact the Friends of the Clearwater website at www.wildrockies.org and you just /FOC. Also, there's a bill in Congress right now to give special privileges and exempt people on horseback from environmental regulations. That is not offered to either hikers or bikers or even people on motor vehicles. And this bill, if you're interested in commenting on that, and there's a lot of people that are very concerned about it because it removes the ability of the agencies like the Forest Service to control public use in very sensitive times, for example, birthing times for animals. You can again contact that Friends of the Clearwater website, and there'll be some information on that posted in the next few days. So those are a couple of things that are happening in and around the West. So before we get into our topic today, just want to introduce Sue. How are you doing?
I'm good.
All right, Sue Westervelt.
Trying to stay cool.
Yeah, as we all are. Talking a little bit about wolves. And what do you have up for us once we get back from a quick music break?
Well, I brought a tape that I borrowed from the Moscow Public Library several years back. It was a project for the Natural History magazine. It's called The Language and Music of Wolves, and it's narrated by Robert Redford. It was recorded in 1971, so there's not going to be anything real current, nothing new. It's just a general overview of wolves and how they fit into our world.
Great. So we're going to be hearing from that once we get back. Take a little quick music break here. And maybe you can introduce that once we listen to the song. Now, if I have the right song queued up, this is a song by, it should be by one called, by Kate Bennett, called Wolf Song, if we have got the right song on there. So this is on a CD called Eye of the Hunter. That's was produced by Musicians United to Sustain the Environment. And that's an organization put together by rather well-known regional musician Joaquin Jim Stoltz. So here is Eye of the Hunter. It is a song called Wolf Song, if I've got the right one here. So here we go. Thank you. And we're back, the Wild Clearwater Country Show. That was a song off of an album, Eye of the Hunter, by Kate Bennett, called Wolf Song. Got Sue Westervelt here with us. We're going to talk a little bit about wolves. And we got a tape that's going to be played here just shortly. And back in the 70s from Robert Redford. Sort of an educational piece about wolves, and you can get it at the Moscow. Is it the Moscow Public Library?
Yes, I believe it was. And it was a number of years back, but I think that they still have their album collection.
Well, good. Well, there we go. And so that's where you can get it from. And we're just letting the engineer is getting things ready to go. So we are ready to go. So we'll listen to this tape by Robert Redford about wolves.
What one of us can hear that song and feel untied to the wilderness that was our beginning? To Western man, that cry filling the woods from every side is at once mournful and menacing, yet strangely alluring. While it paralyzes our own movement, we sense behind it the vague form pursuing tirelessly, its ghostly silence broken only by the final snarling leap, the abrupt scream. Well, such is the stuff that myths are built on, and such is the potential in the wolf's fear-striking ability, that the folk language of dozens of countries is filled with such tales. But from these tales, most of us form our lasting, erroneous impressions of the wolf. Because there is not a case, not one, of wolves attacking and killing man on this continent, there are rumors and adventure stories and fascinating lies, but no authenticated cases. Even though strangely on learning this, we feel a certain disappointment at being robbed of a delicious childlike fear. Mankind's fear of wolves is perfect. It surpasses our dread of tigers. We find them more dangerous than sharks.
Why?
Why this terror of a beast half our weight and almost identical in appearance to the dog, the most beloved animal outside our species? It is not his appearance that stops our heart. The opposite. His invisibility. It is possible to live in the same habitat with a wolf for years and never encounter him. He is elusive. We know he is near, for we see his tracks. We know he kills, for we see the remains. We know he lives because we hear the howl. And that howl has created our attitude toward the wolf more than any other of his habits or characteristics. A trapper once tried to describe it. Take a dozen railroad whistles, braid them together, and let one strand after another drop off, the last peal so frightfully piercing as to go through your heart. The howl of the threatening wolf, that ugly signal of catastrophe, echoes through our culture, repeated in songs, in poems, in movies. And only now, in the twilight of the wolf's time on this planet, are we leaving behind the myths and the folk tales and learning some facts about the wolf and one or two things about his language. He once roamed the continent, filling his role in the wilderness. Then man showed up. Always, and the pattern never changes, man moves into the wolf's territory. When man arrived, he destroyed the wolf's natural prey, the buffalo, the moose, the caribou. He changed the habitat of the wolf and the wolf's prey, and he turned the lands over to his own defenseless beasts, the cow and the horse, sheep and goat. The wolf adapts. He kills and eats the only prey available to him, man's livestock. And while man fights back with guns and traps, snares and poisons, the wolf's only means of survival are his wits. So he learns to hide from man. He attempts to move away to other territory, away from the awful power of man. And so, once having the largest distribution of any large mammal in North America, today he is gone from all the United States but Alaska and part of the upper Great Lakes states. Even where he still lives, he is pursued because he kills deer, moose, caribou that man values for sport hunting. He lives and travels in his pack. With luck on his side, life lasts about 7 years. Although his jaws are powerful enough to snap a 2-inch log or crush an elk's thigh, they are seldom turned on his fellow wolves, and he never fights to the death. His teeth, his speed, his very strength are simply tools by which he has a chance to live long enough to continue his species. The wolf brings no more anger or ferocity to his task of catching and killing a deer than you or I do in eating a sirloin steak or picking apples. He never kills for the thrill of killing, and he returns to the kill over and over until it is finished. When he kills, he usually kills the old and the infirm, the diseased, and of course some young. By killing, he strengthens the herd. Ironically, by every kill, he ensures that the next victim will be even harder to take. As the Eskimo legend puts it so neatly, the wolf and the caribou are one, for the caribou feeds the wolf, but it is the wolf who keeps the caribou strong. The wolf is not a hunter, not in the way that the leopard is a hunter. The wolf's success at hunting comes because he is a wanderer. Indeed, this is a genetic trait. Wolves that keep moving find more prey and consequently survive longer. They slip into a tireless trot of about 5 miles per hour, which the wolf can maintain for half a day. The element of chance governs their encounter with prey as much as any specific hunting skill. As they cover the miles that make up a day's travel, they ordinarily come upon a herd or a single animal. When that happens, they give chase. And they are successful less than 7% of the time. That seems astounding until we remember that the wolf has made his prey strong. By culling the weakest and slowest, the wolf causes the remaining faster animals to become the breeding stock. And a newer, stronger animal is the result. And so the wolf travels and chases, and often enough wins. And the prey races away for its very life, and often enough wins. Life in the pack, though apparently simple, is extraordinarily intricate. Each wolf must learn exactly his position. He learns whom he can dominate, and he remembers those who dominate him. In each pack, there is one stronger wolf, which none can dominate, and who dominates all others. This is the leader, or alpha wolf. He leads his pack until he is deposed by a younger, stronger wolf, who then becomes the next alpha, the next leader. The leader must be forever alert, protecting his position of dominance, and displaying the leadership that will win food and shelter. When the wolf chooses a mate, it is done within the rules of dominance already established in the pack. About 3 weeks before the birth of the pups, the female begins to seek her den. Soon, for the billionth time, wolf pups enter the world. They are blind, deaf, and weigh about 1 pound. The female stays with them. The male continues to travel with the pack. When they bring down the prey, the male carries food back to the den, either in his mouth or in his stomach. But aside from bringing the food, the male is not allowed to contribute much to the early upbringing of the pups. In about 2 months, the pups are big enough to leave the den, and the entire family moves out to a litter site. This is usually a large open area where the pups can play while the pack hunts. And now any member of the pack might become the babysitter. Wolves love wolf pups and will patiently suffer through long hours of aggravation by them. They delight in watching the pups play and join in rolling, jumping, chasing, and slowly impart knowledge that the pups will later use in stalking or pursuing and catching prey. Here in the open, if you could watch without being seen, you could learn some of the language of the wolf. First, the wolf's body language. When you have owned a dog long enough, you learn to read some of his body language. His tail wags when he's happy, he cringes when frightened, his lips pull back in a snarl when he's angry. But the wolf has a richer physical vocabulary. The way he holds his tail can broadcast his social position in the pack. he moves in again to display self-confidence. In another position, it implies a threat. In still another position, it demonstrates surrender. The wolf's face is also extraordinarily mobile. He has facial expressions that threaten, that show suspicion, that indicate puzzlement, that suggest pleasure. And these expressions can be read by all other wolves in the pack. One of the reasons wolves so seldom fight among themselves is that they can communicate their feelings so clearly, so a crisis situation is almost never reached. And the wolf employs sound. He whimpers and growls and barks and howls. The growl of the wolf is unmistakable. It is clearly a warning. It can mean get out of my sight, or this food is mine, or stay away from my pups. It is always unfriendly. We seldom think of wolves barking, but they do, and they seem to mean something by it. There is an alarm bark. The alarm bark is short. When it is given, wolves fall silent until they determine what the danger is. A second bark is a challenge. It helps the wolf establish territory, and it is a clear warning to intruders. And finally, the howl. The howl. That eerie wail that is by far the most significant call of all animals. The howl. The disembodied sound that gives shape to so much of our terror. One after another, never on the same note, never for the same length of time. All voices different, yet eternally unchanged. The wolf loves to howl. Listen. When a howl begins, all wolves in the area reply, seeking contact with one another. Some wolves will run to join the pack and contribute their own song. During the howl, each wolf is concerned with his own melody, but he's also aware of his brothers. The wolves often land on the same note. One or the other will soon shift by a note or two. Maybe wolves like chords. A typical howl may begin with a few long, low howls. One after another wolf joins in, and the chorus swells, then dwindles, often to some short barks. The howl sometimes serves to reunite the pack. Because the wolf is a wanderer, the pack often spreads out more than a mile. As they roam during their nightly hunts, the howl would help them maintain contact. The howl also can proclaim territory. And because one wolf recognizes the howls of his own pack, he can avoid trespassing onto another pack's territory. During his life, the wolf is seldom out of sound of the howl. Except during bad weather and except during the chase, the wolf may howl at any time, and when he does, other wolves will often join in. Sometimes the howl is a casual affair, with wolves barely getting to their feet. At other times, though, the howl is an obviously exciting event. The wolves show great interest in the howl and seek contact with each other until the howl ends. But today, that howl is heard less and less. As his numbers diminish and his lands are usurped, the wolf moves away. Soon, he will have no territories to retreat to. Soon, his kind will disappear. And this splendid creature, this living machine that has triumphed for 10,000 millennia, will follow other species into the absolute, irreversible emptiness of extinction. No science will replace him. No other being will possess his qualities. A strand in Earth's thin web of life will be gone. He has been driven from most of Europe. He is being driven from North America. He is bountied in Alaska, Ontario, and the Northwest Territories. He is poisoned and trapped. He is shot from airplanes and chased by riflemen on snowmobiles into the last retreats of vanishing wilderness. The wild wolves are almost gone.
And you're listening to KRFP, Moscow, Wild Clearwater Country Show. And that was a segment produced by Robert Redford, narrated by Robert Redford about wolves. It's now, 35 years old? Wow. My, how times change.
Yes, and the prediction of extinction did not come true, luckily.
Luckily, that's right. That, although wolves are not doing as well as some people would have us believe. They, people say, wow, there are 600 now in Idaho. Well, let's look at the probably the most numerous predator, at least mammalian predator, large mammalian predator in Idaho. And there's how many of us? 1.5 million, something like that. You know, you compare that with 600 wolves, and there are thousands times more humans than wolves. So that's kind of a, you know, that's sort of an interesting comparison. What, 3,000 times perhaps as many of us as there are wolves. So for every wolf in Idaho, there are 3,000 human beings.
Right. And we need to keep in mind, too, that there are quirks in nature that could totally wipe out that 600 wolves without a blink of an eye, whether it would be distemper or, you know, some other kind of disease. A drop in prey, who knows what, but, you know, overall, 600 isn't that many.
No, it isn't, and certainly there were wolves in the past in Idaho. There probably always were a few wolves. In fact, the documents from Fish and Wildlife Service admitted that there were wolves, and they actually had some confirmed sightings came from the Wild Clearwater Country in the 70s. Once the wolves were listed under the Endangered Species Act, wasn't long thereafter up in Hanson Meadows, also in Wheatus Creek, some photographic evidence and other evidence of wolves that was actually confirmed. So wolves have found a home in Idaho. They're not always welcome, and they were pretty much wiped out of the state. It didn't take humans that long, at least humans of European extraction. Arrived in Idaho. The first, I guess, known Europeans to see the state were Lewis and Clark. And it wasn't long after that. In about a little over 100 years, they were gone. First settlements didn't happen until, you know, 50 years or so after Lewis and Clark. So maybe about 50 years. An all-out assault on the wolves. And they were pretty much extinct, although a few may have hung on in some places. And Idaho's backcountry, that attests to the the size of Idaho's backcountry, that there were at least a few there. And now we have a few back, and I guess the future still is uncertain.
And there certainly have been some conflicts with wolves. Just a couple weeks ago, there was an article in the Lewiston Morning Tribune about ways that people can take care of their dogs if they take them with them in the backcountry. Keep them on leashes, common sense. Don't let them chase wildlife. Keep them in your tent at night. Just always keep your eye on a dog, because wolves are very territorial, especially when they're denning. And it only takes a second for the silent wolves to do away with a dog.
Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. Etiquette in the backcountry with dogs. People just need to be aware of that, because most of the wild Clearwater country, with the exception of, I guess, the Palouse Ranger District, it's occupied by wolves, and there may even be a few here in the Palouse. I guess in the far eastern end of the Palouse Ranger District and around Elk River and the North Fork of the Clearwater, there certainly are some confirmed packs, and there have been rumors. I don't know if there's anybody's confirmed any wolves in more or less the Palouse Ranger District, the west side, in the Palouse watershed or the Potlatch River watershed. But yes, proper etiquette in the backcountry. It's interesting that some of the conflicts with wolves have come over hunting dogs, people letting their dogs go out and chase bears and whatnot. And this is where I think the Idaho Department of Fish and Game needs to be a little more consistent. On one hand, they're telling people you need to have proper etiquette in the backcountry. On the other hand, though, the regulations for hunting dogs are such that it encourages conflict rather than discourages conflict.
Right.
Dogs hunt bears in the spring. They're allowed, in fact, encouraged. We also have bear baiting in the spring, which habituates, of course, bears to human food and creates problem bears. But in the same way that if you have a lot of dogs chasing bears during the springtime, right when wolves are denning, they come across wolves, they enter wolf territory, and then the wolves become very nervous because there's this whole pack of dogs out there, and they think they're going to be after their pups. And so that creates a conflict right from the beginning, and some changes in regulations on hunting, I think, would be one way to eliminate that conflict, this conflict that we've seen time and time and time again. And we don't have in other western states. For example, Montana doesn't have dog hunting of spring during spring time for bears. They don't allow that. They also don't bait bears there. And so you have very few conflicts with dogs and wolves in the backcountry as a consequence. And so, Sue, I think we ought to maybe switch gears here just a little bit, and perhaps talk about some of the, you know, what's the future is for wolves here in Idaho and some of the current policy. But before that, I thought it might be interesting to take a quick musical break and listen to a song by one of Moscow's resident, or former, I guess, erstwhile resident songwriters, and he's becoming quite famous,
right?
Josh Ritter. And he has a song on his album, The Animal Years. I guess that's a fairly new album. It's just out this year, in fact.
Yes,
in fact, I think this is his brand new album. It was written up in the Inlander and other places, other media outlets. And his second cut on that song is called Wolves, so I think we'll just listen to that right now, and I'll come back and talk some little bit more about wolves. And when we come back too, I'll also give a weather update. I'm sure all the weather observers out there are very interested in that as well.
Started listening to the wolves in the timber, the wolves in the timber. times in the frozen nights I go roaming in the bed you used to share with me. I wake in the field with the cold and the lonesome. The moon's the only face that I see. I still remember the time when we were dancing, dancing to a song that I'd heard. Your face was simple, your hands were naked. I was singing without knowing the words. So long, so high, so long, so high, so long, so high, so long.
And you're listening to KRFP Moscow. That was Josh Ritter.
What a great tune.
What a great tune and song about wolves. I think we're going to have to hear another a song from that album shortly. But wow. Wow, what a good song.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, it makes me think about the use of wolves in art. And, you know, it's the kind of the embodiment of the spirit of the wild, even as... You know, it triggers fear in humanity. There's something about the image of the wolf, the sound of the wolf, the song of the wolf that lives in all of our hearts, you know, and you find him on posters, on cups, on cards. Everybody wants to own a piece of the wolf.
That's so true. In fact, you see them T-shirts everywhere.
People. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the mystique of this wild creature that just doesn't need us at all.
That really is interesting because it's, when we think about Idaho, I think, for example, locally here, or sort of locally in the Clearwater Country, the cul-de-sac, the wolves, that's the high school mascot down there.
Yes.
For example.
Yes.
And we have nationally, there's some sports teams, I can't remember where they moved to, they used to be in Minnesota, I don't know if they still are, where the Timberwolves, you know, one of the basketball teams. So wolves are everywhere. I mean, I've seen so many people with T-shirts, those black T-shirts with that sort of ethereal wolf there in that kind of white color, you know.
And, right.
And
many
yeah.
times it's made to look vicious, you know. It's
yeah.
Yeah, which is not totally accurate, but
no,
it certainly can be vicious.
Oh, they can be. That's not totally accurate.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So they're sort of an archetypal creature. In fact, some theories of human development have posited that wolves, of course, are the animal that was domesticated first, and it became the dog.
Right.
That's where our longtime companions come from. Dogs are wolves. Genetically, they're wolves. And some, I don't know, I guess estimates range anywhere from 25 to 50,000 years ago or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
They were, in quote-unquote, domesticated. And just, it's very interesting, our interaction with wolves. And some people think that, some anthropologists think that human beings... I learned a lot about how to behave as a social animal.
Right.
From wolves.
In fact, I think that we're very similar in our pack makeup and in the care of our young and,
yeah.
you know, the extended family that takes care of the pups. And we're probably more like them than many people would like to admit.
Exactly. And the way we behave, we do have our own territories and
yes.
We can... Except little nation states and rivalries, and then we can see that in our current political situation globally. So yeah, probably much more like them than we would
mm-hmm.
than we would care to admit. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to take a kind of a little segue, quick break here for all those weather watchers out there. Give a little update. It's about 23% humidity. Wind speed is variable, about 5 miles an hour. The barometer is about 30. Minutes right now, I guess that's why it's 30.03, and it's 1014.7 millibars. Dew point's about 44 degrees, heat index about 83 degrees Fahrenheit. Right now, maybe a little hotter. Visibility about 10 miles. And the prediction, or the forecast, I guess, maybe a better term, partly cloudy. Low is about 59 degrees tonight. We may not have much dew. A slight chance of thunderstorms tomorrow. High around 85. Again, we're about at that high right now, maybe a little above it. But the probability they're saying is about 20%. Tomorrow night, again, probability 20% of thunderstorms, a little lower, 53 degrees. And through the weekend, the extended forecast looks like it's going to get a little bit warmer on Friday with chance of thunderstorms again. Slight cooling trend on Saturday, again, some 20% chance of thunderstorms. Saturday night, though, mid-80s for the highs. And then clearing up for Sunday, mostly clear skies and a little bit warmer. So it looks like quite a warm weekend for those of you planning to go out and do some things. Maybe if you're out in the backcountry, maybe
looking for wolves,
listen to them howl and seeing what they can do. So, Sue, current situation here in Idaho, there's a proposal that the Idaho Department of Fish and Game and the Idaho Fish and Game Commission passed along to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to kill wolves in the Upper Clearwater. Many of them, up to 75% of the wolves up there. That's just sort of in, I guess, bureaucratic limbo right now. Fish and Wildlife Service needs to do a study. In fact, they said they would probably have to do an environmental assessment, an environmental impact statement, which requires public involvement before they could approve that proposal. The interesting thing is, do you recall what the peer reviewer said about the science on that proposal?
That was interesting, yes.
Basically, there was none. Wolves are not responsible for a decline in elk numbers in the Clearwater. Elk were declining prior to that. And in fact, when we look at watersheds and plant succession and whatnot, it's probably a needed thing. And of course, the wolf numbers then will also follow their prey, elk and deer and whatnot. If those numbers go down, then the wolf numbers tend to decline. And as you pointed out, diseases and other factors affect wolves.
Right.
They're not as productive if the food isn't available and the pups don't make it. Or they may not, I guess, and if I'm right about this, under certain times of stress, they may not produce young.
Absolutely, yeah.
Again, under certain conditions. So wolves are actually do behave as humans supposedly behave. There's a call R&K responses. Scientists refer to certain animals that are somewhat self-regulating versus others that are not. Wolves tend to be self-regulating. In theory, humans are supposed to be, but with 6 billion in us and counting, I think that theory might have to go out the window.
Right.
But wolves do self-regulate.
Especially if they're left wild. You know, the wolves that we have here, they've been trapped and collared and just handled so much that it makes them vulnerable. And so they do seek easier prey,
yeah,
which gets them in trouble.
It does get them in trouble. And one of the things that is great about Idaho and the potential for Idaho is with the large backcountry and wilderness we have, places like the Selway Bitterroot or Frank Church River, No Return Gospel Hump, you know, in that North Fork country, all those. We could let wolves play their role. We don't have to trap them, collar them,
yes.
Drug them, follow them, and do all that sort of stuff. We can let them play their role. And I think we, as far as some people are aware, there are a couple packs, perhaps in that middle Selway country, that have never been collared. And they're behaving as wild wolves should. And actually, all the wolves in the backcountry, we know quite a bit about wolves.
Mm-hmm.
That fine program we heard from Robert Redford, 35 years old, and a lot more has been learned.
Still very relevant.
Still very relevant today, yet, you know, how many more wolves do we need to collar and dart and do all those things to really learn about them? We know a lot about predator-prey relationships. We know about density-dependent when it comes to certain ungulate species like elks, like the elk.
It seems like a better thing to do would be to pull livestock back and get the and kind of clear the way for wolves where we know they are in the wild country.
Uh-huh.
Cows and sheep don't need to be everywhere.
No, they don't. And amazingly and surprisingly, They don't need to be everywhere, and in a lot of this backcountry, they're not available here, and especially north of the Salmon River. South, though, there are some big problems in Idaho, and that's mm-hmm. where the conflicts arise. Up here to the north, there are a few, but conflicts are starting to happen in some places, but not so much. Wolves will be wolves, and that's part of living in the world, in a natural world. We can't control everything. We certainly don't control the hurricanes. We don't control the weather, although we're having an effect on it as human beings. Well, we certainly don't control it. So one of our fellow, if I can use that term, inhabitants of the planet, making a very tenuous comeback here in the state of Idaho. Sue, I thought we might take a quick music break and come on and wrap up with some awesome talk. You have anything else that you want to tell the listeners what we're going to talk about today?
I think another tune would be great from Josh. Right.
I think so, from Josh Ritter. So I think we'll just go in order. Should we play the Idaho tune, or should we do the next one? And we got one called Monster Ballads. Or
let's do the Idaho tune.
Let's do the Idaho tune. So that's tune number 5 on this. And we'll play the song about Idaho from Josh Ritter. It's about a little over 3 minutes long here. So here we go. Some more Josh Ritter. Moscow, or former Moscow resident. His parents still live here in town. World famous now. He's getting to be very famous. And he's a big, big draw, I understand, in the Republic of Ireland. So here we go, Josh Ritter.
All that love, all those mistakes. What else can a poor man make? That I give up a life for crime. I gave it to a friend of mine. Something else was on my mind. The only ghost I'm haunted by. I hear her howling down below. Idaho, Idaho. Wolves, oh, can't you see? Ain't no wolf can sing like me. And if it could, then I suppose that he belongs in Idaho. Packs of dogs and cigarettes for those who ain't done packing yet. My clothes are packed and I wanna go. Idaho, Idaho. For 7 years I got your letter in Tangier. I thought that I'd been on a boat till that single word you wrote, the single word that landlocked me, turned the mast to cedar tree. And the wind to gravel roads. Idaho, Idaho. Turn the wind to gravel roads. Idaho, Idaho. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that was Josh Ritter.
You can tell that boy has Idaho bloodlines.
Yes, he does. He talks about wolves in that song as well. Wolves, wolves, and he thinks he can sing better than wolves. Well, I don't know, Josh. I might have to, I have to wonder about that one, but a great, great song.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a poem for us, Sue.
Yes, I was poking around in Barry Lopez's very famous book of Wolves and Men, and he printed a poem in here called Howl, and it's by a man named Alda Orton, who is an Alaskan trapper, so this is actually very apropos. It was wild, untamed music, and it echoed from the hillsides and filled the valleys. It sent a queer, shivering feeling along my spine. It was not a feeling of fear, you understand, but a sort of tingling, as if there was hair on my back, and it was hackling.
I love that. That's great.
Yes.
It's great. As good as that song about packs of cigarettes and packs of dogs, and I guess packs of wolves, and I don't know. Wow. What visual imagery. Well, I think we're getting down to about the time for our award segment.
Yes.
So we do a little drumming here on the table, and we have the Whopper of the Week. And before we, I'll preface the Whopper of the Week with a story. And actually, we're going to give two awards, the Whopper and maybe wild salmon meat or something to the wild salmon meat first to the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Went and did a study and got some information through the Freedom of Information Act and found out that there's a problem on our national forests, that a lot of the Forest Service employees have been attacked, and those attacks are increasing. This is talking specifically about some, I guess, physical attacks.
Yes, not attacks by wolves.
No. This is physical attacks
by
other humans. And in one instance, there was somebody that was run down by somebody on a snowmobile. And it looks like that one of the conclusions drawn from this report was that because of more off-road vehicle use in the backcountry and the fact the Forest Service has not, even though they've had regulations on the book for as long as that... It's about 35 years, dating back almost 35 years to the executive order from Nixon. They, in many places of the country, they have not implemented those regulations and tried to control off-road vehicles. So they get this wild salmon meat for coming out of this report and finding out there's a connection there. However, Mark Ray, who is the Undersecretary of Agriculture, and he gets the Whopper Award for this, said something to the effect that without any data, even though he said most of the assaults in 2004 were as a result of encounters with drunks, drug users, or deranged environmental protesters. Well, that shows, first of all, Mark Ray for what he is, and I'll say it on air, a liar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of any so-called deranged environmental protesters in 2004 that had any assaults or attacks on the Forest Service. I do know of several instances where Forest Service employees have attacked and have environmental protesters, and the history of the Cove Mallard timber sales are a good one that illustrates that. But the data did show that the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility came up, showed a pretty strong correlation between off-road vehicle use and certain attacks. And the Forest Service went on to say most ATV riders are responsible. Guess what? An ATV group themselves went out and did a recent study that showed that slightly over 50% people who use off-road vehicles and ATVs, if given the opportunity, have violated the law and gone into closed areas. And so for the Forest Service to claim that the majority of them are fine, you know, it's not a few bad apples. It's a systemic problem that we need to, as a society, confront. So for those reasons, we're giving Mark Ray for misleading the public about poor policy decisions that he has made and that the administration continues to make. He gets the Whopper of the Week. So
well-deserved. There we go.
Well-deserved Whopper of the Week.
Way to go, Mark.
Okay, so looks like we're just about at the end of the show. Any last thoughts about the wild wolves here in Idaho, Sue, before we get into Between the Lines?
Well, I think I would just like to encourage people to practice tolerance, you know, to remember that we share the forests with many wild creatures. Wolves are just one. They are no more dangerous than any other predator. They just want to be left alone, to carry on their daily lives, much like we do. And I would just encourage tolerance and understanding.
Well, that's good, Sue. And it looks like it's now time for Between the Lines. You're listening to KRFP Moscow, Idaho, the Wild Clearwater Country Show.